And we're back here talking about the southeast of the United States. I'm John Rawl. Good to have you back on Y'all, powered by y'all.com and available in podcast form on Spotify, iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, as well as Apple Podcast, Apple iTunes, and we're free of charge also at y'all.com. That's Y-A-L-L.com, the South's homepage. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us here on what's going to be an exciting Tuesday broadcast, as we've got news from across the country, news coming out about McDonald's, news about Hurricane Lee. We also have a tragic wreck in West Tennessee to tell you about on this Tuesday Y'all show, and we've got information about how much, as we said, Hurricane Lee may, it looks like, dodge the Atlantic seaboard of the United States. But these awful weather disasters have set records, and I'll tell you about that in a second as we go through our headlines of today's Y'all show. Also on this Tuesday Y'all show, in our first hour, we've got our Southern political report, from throwing footballs in Iowa at a frat party, that's what President Trump was doing, to going inside and watching a football game, that's what Ron DeSantis and Trump did in Ames, Iowa this past weekend, to all of the goings-on with Trump's legal issues. On Monday, the president asking a judge to dismiss a case against him, or recuse, I think, also was a case. There's been so much going on. You know, this kind of stuff happens when you got 91 indictments against you. I wonder how many people out there have 91 indictments against them. I doubt there's too many people right now anywhere with that amount. I'm not a person that follows all of the arrest warrants and mugshots of the world, but I would have to think, you know, a simple robbery and murder might get you about 5 indictments, and Trump's got 91. I think that's the count. It may have gone up by the last count. But we're going to talk about that. We might even get into some world politics, as Kim Jong-un of North Korea has traveled to meet Vladimir Putin, and he is now in Russia, the North Korean leader, traveling on his big armored train to get up to the Pacific coast of Russia. We'll discuss that, get a little international with you on today's Y'all show. Also on today's Y'all show, in addition to talking about news and politics, we've got in our second hour information on a new Southern writer. Well, I wouldn't say she's new. She's got a new book called The Breakaway, and her name is Jennifer Weiner, and she was born in Louisiana, and she's got quite a little writing thing going. And we're going to actually hear from Jennifer Weiner. One of her books, this new one, The Breakaway, has just come onto the New York Times bestsellers list. We'll hear from her in hour number two as part of our Southern Book Report, and give you the skinny on all the other big books that are going on right now in the New York Times bestseller world. That's coming up. Plus, in our second hour today, we've got entertainment headlines. Annette O'Toole is a Southerner, and she's on the Netflix series that's getting a lot of attraction right now, Virgin River. We'll tell you about Annette O'Toole. Plus, in our entertainment headlines hour two, we will tell you about some new country music babies being born. That's ahead in the second hour. Our final hour today, he's back. It's the Takapola storyteller, Jerry Short, and ain't no telling what we're going to be talking about when he stops by for a conversation. And it's always fun to catch up with a guy who talks a lot about the old days, but sometimes he'll surprise you and talk about some current trends that have a story. And Jerry will be on in hour three as part of our Takapola storyteller segment. And we also have in our final hour our Southern recipe of the day. And only because of a delicious episode that I had on Monday, I just had to go do something a little bit different. And I had one heck of a baked potato at a restaurant on Monday. And so it got me thinking, hey, what are some really good choices for recipes when it comes to the baked potato? And I found the recipe, courtesy of the website asouthernsoul.com, for best stuffed baked potatoes. And we'll walk through that. And maybe if you got some potatoes somewhere in your cabinet, you'll pay attention to what we have to tell you as part of our Southern Recipe of the Day in our third hour. And you will be able to have the best stuffed baked potatoes on your plate in no time. All that right here on today's Y'all Show. If you'd like to get involved with the program, we've got an email address, mail@yall.com. We also have our text line, 615-208-4184. That's the text line available 24/7, no matter where or how you listen to the Y'all Show. In fact, speaking of the text line, let me check in with a couple of texts that have come in. Texter says, in terms of the, I think this is talking about how I said Trump was being indicted and wants to have the judge recuse herself. Texter says, that judge is a registered Trump hater and should be removed from the bench at a minimum for previous actions politically motivated. Thank you for that. And we'll talk about that. That's going to be covered in our political report, Texter, a little bit later. We'll give you, I think her name is Judge Chutkan, and she is a Jamaican American, and we'll discuss what Trump's legal team's trying to do with her getting out of this. I mean, she's already put several of the January 6th rioters in jail for a long time. Really, this Trump case should be going in front of a judge and a jury that has not seen anything to do with January 6th, in my opinion, and my legal expertise. And my legal expertise is limited to 0 days in law school. And I have served as a foreman on a jury before. I put a guy in jail for years as a part of a jury that I did my constitutional and patriotic duty. And we all should do that. I just don't want to do it every year or two or three or four. It was tough. It was tough doing that. But the guy shouldn't have did. He should not have done what he did. And he's been in jail for a while. All right, another text coming in says, did you hear about Charlie Robinson's passing at 59? Sad. Yeah, we covered that on our Monday Y'all Show, but I appreciate you bringing that up, Texter. Charlie Robinson, a Texas country music singer, only had one top 40 song, but really kind of known by a lot of people for being the husband of one of the Dixie Chicks for years, and they've got three children together. I believe it's Emily from the Dixie Chicks is who he was married to, but they divorced several years ago. Charlie Robinson died of a cardiac arrest over the weekend in San Antonio at age 59. So thank you for reminding me. And frankly, let me remind all of you out here at the Y'all Show, no question is a dumb question. And so the texter here asking me, did I hear about Charlie Robinson passing? Yes, and we covered it. But a lot of you may not have heard it. So I'm glad the texter sent this in. It gives me an opportunity to once again tell y'all about some news across the Southeast, and in that case, some unfortunate entertainment news from the weekend. Let's get into our news headlines of the day. And right now, a story out about how the United States has set a record for billion-dollar weather disasters for this year. And the most recent disaster that struck America was Hurricane Idalia, which came ashore on the Big Bend area of Florida and ended up really affecting Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas primarily, with flooding and high winds. Wasn't as deadly as some other storms have been, but between Idalia and its damage, and now we're still counting and trying to find out what happened to these people in Maui with the firestorm that happened out there. It's been a rough year from a disaster standpoint. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Monday announced that there have been 23 extreme weather events in the United States thus far in 2023, and that's cost at least $1 billion. And we're still 4 months away from being wrapped up for this year. And already we're seeing, thanks to this report from the NOAA, that the $1 billion in cost has eclipsed the year-long record total of 22 set in 2020. That's 22 weather extreme events. We've already had 23 in this year alone. And so this year's disasters have cost more than $57.6 billion and claimed at least 253 lives. So a lot of damage. I think this number is incorrect on the one of these $1 billion amounts is incorrect, because the story here is they've cost at least $1 billion. I don't know. The point is, we've already got, if nothing else from the story, 23 weather extreme events recorded thus far, and the previous high was 22, which was set back in the year 2020. It's been a rough year. Now, an update, speaking of weathers and potential disasters, we might be dodging a bullet here in the United States when it comes to Hurricane Lee, as Hurricane Lee was north of Puerto Rico earlier today as a Category 3 storm, and forecasters believe it's going to remain in open waters the rest of this week, and it's going to be charting a path, if anywhere, toward Atlantic Canada. So it looks like it's going to miss out on the United States altogether based on the forecast. The storm was about 600 miles south of Bermuda earlier today, with winds of 115 miles per hour and moving west-northwest at 7 miles per hour. By this Sunday, Lee was going to evidently weaken. It's projected to weaken into a tropical storm and make landfall in Nova Scotia in the nation of Canada, with significant storm surge. But it doesn't mean the United States is completely skipping out. We've already seen some dangerous surf conditions in some of the Atlantic states, like the Carolinas, Virginia, and more. Winds and flooding are expected to affect the New England states of Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire, as well as Maine. So that's going on throughout the next few days in those New England states. Lee is expected to weaken in the coming days as it enters cooler water. So this Category 3 hurricane likely coming ashore sometime over the weekend in Canada, specifically Nova Scotia. And it may end up being just a tropical storm, because of those cooler waters are going to slow down the storm and certainly break up its intensity. And that would be a really, really good thing. Now, we have an update from the tropics, as Margo became the fifth named hurricane of the season on Monday. Margo, located some 935 miles southwest of the Azores out there in the Atlantic. And so now we've got another one to keep an eye on. M-A-R-G-O-T, Margo. A potential storm here. It looks like it's already classified as a hurricane. It has maximum sustained winds of 85 miles per hour way out there near the Azores. But coming this way, Hurricane Margo, making headlines now. Other stories across the nation here on this Tuesday Y'all show. So we had the return of NFL football the last few days. Monday night game between the Jets and Bills, of which Aaron Rodgers got hurt on Monday Night Football just a few hours back. Now DraftKings, the sports betting company, is having to apologize after they used the September 11, 2001 terror attacks to entice people to bet on baseball and football games on the anniversary of 9/11, of which 3,000 people died. DraftKings offered users a 9/11 themed promotion that required three New York-based teams, the Yankees, Mets, and Jets, to win their game on Monday, each to win their games, and that tied into the 22nd anniversary of the attacks of the World Trade Center and the attack at the Pentagon and the passenger jet that was downed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. An outcry on social media from people offended by the promotion. This promotion, titled Never Forget, was quickly taken down, and DraftKings apologized. Pretty low down. I think they call that in sports betting world a parlay, of where you would bet on the Yankees, Mets, and Jets to win Monday's games, and you evidently would have won a fair amount of money if you correctly picked the winner there from sports betting company DraftKings. Somebody is probably losing their job today at DraftKings for the stupid, just completely stupid promotion. Now, what's also stupid, while we keep the stupid headlines going, how about the U.S. Census Bureau? They only have one job. It's a job they only have to do once every 10 years. In fact, in 2020, they got off easy. Because if you know anything about the census, usually it's a pain in the tuchus as far as having census takers come and knock on your door and come back and knock again. And they are pretty strict on who is living in your house. Well, evidently, they have now corrected some errors from the 2020 census in some pretty big portions of our country. In fact, this is going to cause a gain in population in some of these big cities. Included in that is the Southeast. The Atlanta urban area got its population adjusted this week from the U.S. Census Bureau, adjusted from 4.9 million to 5.1 million people live in the Atlanta urban area in Georgia. An additional 853,000, so just over 100,000 residents living in more than 30,000 homes had been mistakenly assigned to the Gainesville, Georgia urban area in Hall County, not far from Atlanta, two counties away, you could argue. But the Census Bureau had put over 100,000 people into Gainesville when they should have been in the Fulton County area. And that's going to cause Atlanta's urban number to go up to over 5 million residents. Also in the Southeast, New Orleans area, it grew by about 50,000 because the Census Bureau corrected the numbers for the New Orleans urban area. Now New Orleans has 963,212. Stand up! They got that many people now, as opposed to what they originally counted at just over 914,000 people. And the reason for that additional nearly 50,000 resident gain in New Orleans, the Census Bureau had mistakenly assigned those numbers to the LaPlace, Lutcher, Gramercy, Louisiana urban area. Oops, there are other portions of the country that also have had miscalculations. After every once in a decade, the census that the Census Bureau takes, the Census Bureau publishes a list of urban areas and their population and housing counts. And this most recent one was published back in December of 2022. But they have this country growing. I was watching, I don't know how these things pop up. I don't claim to be an Atlanta Falcons fan, but I was watching something just Monday evening on YouTube. It showed up on my YouTube suggestions, and I started watching it. It was really well done. I guess ESPN did it, all about the 1990s Atlanta Falcons and prime time, Deion Sanders being there, and Brett Favre. And it was really enjoyable, and it really was about how Atlanta was coming to be a state-of-the-art city in the 1990s, and the Falcons had been such losers throughout their history. And then with the advent of the 1990s, the Atlanta Braves started to be really good and make the postseason. And the Atlanta Olympics had been announced, as the Olympics were coming in 1996. And this was a really well-done piece. If for no other reason, some of the people that were in it, they had interviews with Deion Sanders, Brett Favre, a lot of rappers and hip-hop people like MC Hammer, and Jerry Glanville, the old Falcons coach. It was really, really good. And if I could pull it up right now, I would play a clip of just how he was picking to some degree, but I think he really didn't like him. The relationship between the old Atlanta Falcons head coach Jerry Glanville and rookie Brett Favre back in the 1991 season, it was pretty wild. He kept calling him Mississippi. And I think Brett Favre recalled the first time that he met Glanville, he said, "Oh, you're Mississippi. And where'd you go to college?" And Brett Favre said, "Southern Miss." "Oh, I thought you went to Mississippi State." And evidently Glanville was kind of picking. I don't know. Glanville didn't really want Favre picked in the second round, I think it was, in that draft. And so he was never welcomed there in Atlanta. But he was welcomed by Deion Sanders. Deion and Favre actually went up against each other in college when Southern Miss played Florida State. And Deion was quick to point out he had a pick six against Brett Favre when the Golden Eagles and Seminoles went up against each other. But primetime took Favre shopping somewhere in Atlanta, probably into an area that Favre would not normally have been shopping in. And Favre said he never wore those clothes that he and Deion went shopping. And Deion, I think, bought them back in the early 1990s. Those two guys went on to be NFL Hall of Famers. But in 1991, they were teammates. And Favre really never even played. Chris Miller was the starting quarterback for the Falcons back in that year. Some old NFL news. But the reason I brought all this up was there was and may still be somewhere in Atlanta a digital readout that keeps the population of the Atlanta area displayed. And one of the people interviewed on this piece moved to Atlanta in the 1960s, I think it was. And the population counter when they first moved there was something like 600,000 people were in metro Atlanta. And then when this piece was done in the 1990s, they showed that same display. I think it might be at a bank somewhere in Atlanta. And by that time, it had grown to be several million. Well, today we can report that metro Atlanta, just the Fulton County proximity, now 5.1 million residents strong, and the home of the Atlanta Falcons. Winners, by the way, week one against the Carolina Panthers. And love the head coach of the Falcons now, Arthur Smith. Have y'all seen him? The son of Fred Smith, the founder of FedEx. He's got him a nice little mustache going, and I like it. He's got a good look there. And he's a smart guy, of course, for a long time was a, I guess he would have been an offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans before going to Atlanta. But a lot of excitement in Atlanta with their sports teams, and a lot of excitement that Atlanta now has got over 5 million residents. And New Orleans is moving on up the charts, too. And check that documentary out if you get a chance on the 1990s. Too legit to quit. Atlanta Falcons. I do remember, even from 30 years ago, and I'm not into hip-hop, but the Falcons had people like MC Hammer and Evander Holyfield coming to their games, and they'd be on the sidelines hanging out. Travis Tritt would be there because he and Jerry Glanville were buddies. In fact, Jerry Glanville, the Falcons, would be in a couple of Travis Tritt music videos and Confederate Railroad music videos, I think, too. Yeah, I know he was in Confederate Railroad because he gets punched out in one of the music videos. It's hilarious. And Jerry Glanville, again, the old Falcons coach, one of the things he would do, if y'all have never heard about this, he would leave tickets for Elvis Presley at Atlanta Falcons games. I'm kidding. I'm not kidding on that one. He would leave a ticket for the King of Rock and Roll to show up. And this is in the 1990s. I'm not really sure what the thinking was, but Jerry Glanville, 81 years young now. And I wonder what he's doing now. Of course, he went on to be part of the United Football League for a while. And he was named in 2018 defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the CFL. He left the team after that season for personal reasons and then ended up getting hired in the XFL for a while. He's sort of been bouncing around some of these crazy startup professional leagues. And he's also been involved in racing, NASCAR racing, and more. And I had forgotten Jerry Glanville, prior to going to Atlanta, was head coach of the Houston Oilers for about 5 years. The Northern Michigan alum, Jerry Glanville. Okay, enough of old NFL talk and much more. We'll have more headlines as we go forward on today's Y'all Show, as we're not too legit to quit. Absolutely not. And when we come back on Y'all, we will pick up with a few more news headlines before the end of the hour. We've got our Southern Political Report, and Trump's wanting to get a judge to recuse herself. We'll give you the latest out of that case and more as the Y'all Show Tuesday edition continues.
By the moon, still by my side, love in arms open wide, and the love that comes over me is enough to make me stay. Is it life lived separately? Is life all it ought to be? Or if it were up to me, I'd make my life with you. Some people say it's a dangerous game. I'll take my chances just the same. If love is a game and you are the prize, you standing here is no surprise. And the love that comes over me is enough to make me stay. Is it life lived separately? Is life all it ought to be? Or if it were up to me, I'd make my life with you.
From 1985, one of the number one songs of the Oak Ridge Boys, Make My Life With You. Can those guys not sing beautifully? And they're still singing beautifully. If you get a chance to see the Oak Ridge Boys in concert sometime, do not miss out on it. We're back on Y'all. We're going through some of the news headlines across the Southeast, and we pick up our news items here for hour number one in West Tennessee, where on Monday, sadly, a high-speed crash has left three people dead in Crockett County, as this happened in the community of Gadsden in Crockett County in West Tennessee. Gadsden Police Department and other law enforcement responding to a crash on Monday around 11:26 in the morning on Highway 79 near Gadsden Elementary School. Efforts to revive three individuals unsuccessful. The identities are still being concealed at this current time, according to the Crockett County Sheriff's Department. The Tennessee Highway Patrol and their critical incident response team, comprised of expert crash reconstructionists, are going to determine all the facts and collect pertinent evidence related to the crash. The THP is the lead investigative agency, and any further updates will come from them, that from the Crockett County, Tennessee Sheriff's Department. But a high-speed crash, unfortunately, right there in front of a school with three people having their lives taken away on Monday. Two men in North Texas have been charged and now are accused of enrolling in high school as students by using fake records. We had an incident like this happen in Louisiana during the past school year. And now these two Dallas-Fort Worth area men are behind bars after The school district, the Crowley Independent School District, said the duo used falsified documents to enroll in a high school as students. 20-year-old Tristan Moses, 19-year-old Kier Trenton are now charged with tampering with government records for allegedly finessing their way into Crowley High School under the guise of new students. The school district said that Crowley High School administrators learned about the men's deception and removed them from the campus before their arrest. Crowley ISD put out a statement assuring parents, students, and faculty that they're working with authorities in this investigation and they're trying to keep Crowley High School safe. These guys, I mean, they were just past high school age by enrolling in the school. The story from Louisiana was the woman was nearly 30 years old when she enrolled as a high school student. And her mama helped her out in that case, went in there and helped falsify information to get her nearly 30-year-old daughter into high school. And she darn near wrapped up the whole year last year. This year we got these two guys, Mr. Moses and Mr. Trenton, the 20-year-old and the 19-year-old, falsifying documents to go into Crowley High School, Crowley, Texas. What were they thinking? What's so great about high school that you want to go back to it? Am I missing something? I'm a few years beyond high school years. I'm having to think, is there any reason that I'd want to go back to my high school and pretend to be a student again? I think I've only been back to my high school once since I got out of high school, and that was when I was in college. Believe it or not, I think I went there when I was escaping a hurricane, and I had like 2 weeks off, and there was nothing else to do. So I think I went into the common area of my high school, probably trying to track down a friend, or maybe, since I was only a freshman in college at the time, maybe trying to pick up a senior in high school as a lady friend, perhaps. I don't know what I was thinking. You know, back in those days, I don't know if I was thinking at all, come to think of it. But are you wanting to run back into high school for some reason? I'll tell you what, there were some teachers that I wouldn't mind hanging out with when I was a student. Of course, no. I just, you know, we see these teachers as 16, 17, 18-year-old kids, like, wow, they're so pretty. But we're kids. Thank God there's separation, as it should be, and that was the case for me. But, you know, I would like to have run into some of these teachers. I had a couple teachers, not necessarily nothing more than a professional deal, but they really did help me out. They helped me get through high school, and I would have loved to have seen them at some point over the last few years, and I never have. Miss Lee, Monica Lee, I've never forgot that name. She was my math teacher my last year of high school, and without me just getting past her class, without me finding a way to get maybe a C in her class, I would not have been able to go to college, because I had to have that math class to get my degree in high school and move on to college. And then I had my own struggles with math in college too. In fact, it was, oddly enough, it was my last semester of my undergrad years that I took my final math class, and I actually had a great teacher. He was actually a French Canadian, and he was my professor in college, and this French Canadian made math make sense to me. And I think it was calculus is what we were taking, I think. And so a lot of it comes down to the teacher and the way they take the time to be your buddy. You're not necessarily friendship buddy, but like a buddy system. They're not going to let you fail. I had another math professor of some type in college who could care less, and he was not a nice guy. And guess what? I failed that class. Therefore, I had to push math back to my senior year. But we can sometimes make it. What is your tough class? I mean, math's not necessarily my forte. But I bet you some of you out there, math was a breeze and it was these other classes that were a little bit more of a challenge. Hey, as long as you can get through, that's what college, high school, any kind of degree program really is more about, is just finishing the deal, not giving up, proving that you can do it. And as I often tell people, I did it because I knew it would one day look really good on a obituary that I had got all these degrees. And you know what? Now people don't even get obituaries. So I wasted my time. I didn't need all these darn college degrees. Because nobody gets obituaries anymore. You have to pay for them. Huh. Wouldn't have seen that one coming back in the day. We're going to scoot over and write the obituary, perhaps, for Donald Trump's presidential campaign, only because of he's got the fact 91 indictments. Maybe. Not really. We'll talk about political talk and more, from Trump throwing footballs in Ames, Iowa, to all these legal issues he's got. That's all right ahead. On y'all, wrapping up this first hour of our program with a lady who's pretty beloved in the college world, Miranda Lambert, and the song called Strange there that she's recently recorded. And Donald Trump, he kind of felt like a member of the AGR fraternity, Alpha Gamma Rho. Over the weekend, President Trump was at the AGR house on the campus of Iowa State University, where he got invited to come throw footballs and fire up the grill on the hamburger grill and flip over a burger or two. Did you see the video of that? Pretty wild. And Trump took some autographed footballs and threw them out to the crowd. Had a good time there in Ames. He was there on that college campus because Iowa State hosted the Iowa Hawkeyes in football in that rivalry game. And Trump was not only the only presidential contender there for that event this past weekend. Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, also at the Cyclones-Hawkeyes battle, as they battle for the Cy Hawk Trophy each year when those two teams get together. But some guys having fun. Of course, I watched some of the liberal media over the weekend, and they focused in on the handful of people that were flipping President Trump off when he was at the football game. Yeah, there were probably 10% of the people that weren't happy about him being there. And they gave him the middle finger and FUs and all that kind of fun stuff. But man, he had a lot of support when he was there in Iowa this past weekend. I haven't seen the video of Ron DeSantis. I'm sure he also had a nice visit to that state as they're out campaigning for president. Speaking of President Trump, let's continue on with some of his legal woes. So President Trump is asking for Georgia officials to toss his case that he's got going on there. And an update from that state, the state of Georgia, Trump has asked a judge to dismiss the Georgia election charges against him. And his filings Monday are his opening salvo of legal arguments to challenge the state-level charges that he's got going on. Now, totally separate of what he's got going on in Georgia, his legal team, I don't even think it's the same legal team. He's got 91 indictments. You have all these things happen when you've got that much going on. Also, this week, Trump is asking Judge Tanya Chutkan in the Washington, D.C. court to recuse herself from his federal 2020 election subversion case that's going on. So he's asking a lot for these judges to step aside. And this is like the highlight of these judges' career, to have a former president potentially be in their courtroom. I don't see that happening. But we wish him well with his case to not have a case, President Donald J. Trump. Now, let's talk about some of the reaction of what's going on with these indictments and how they're helping Trump. As the group, according to CNN.com, the group that won President Trump the election in 2016 may help him win again in 2024. The data guy for CNN is Harry Enten, and according to his article at CNN.com, the people that might come through for President Trump are going to do it again. Trump, although unpopular, he's got a much better favorability with people who aren't happy with Trump or Biden. Voters like Trump favor him by more than 90 points over Biden. And that's a similar number for Biden over Trump, but it's pretty fascinating article up about these independents. Trump leads Biden by 7 points among the 29% of voters who view neither of them favorably. So it comes down to favorability and more, and the CNN article dives heavy into this favorability versus the chances of Trump or Biden getting that unfavorable audience to come through for them before the 2024 election. And a real quick look at the Real Clear Politics polls right now. On the Republican side, Trump easily with a 56-13 lead over DeSantis in the Republican primary. And as far as a head-to-head matchup between Biden and Trump, on the Real Clear Politics average, they've got Biden at 33, Trump at 28. So that one looks to be a little bit more favorable to Biden. Of the Y'all Show is here. Hello there, John Rawl, the general of all things Southern, back with you for another exciting hour of programming. We've got book talk coming up. We'll tell you all about best-selling author and Louisiana-born author Jennifer Weiner. She's got a new book that's on the top five of New York Times bestsellers list, The Breakaway. We'll hear from the Louisiana-born but New England-raised writer as part of our Southern Book Report, and we'll tell you about some of the other books that are right there on the top of the bookseller's list. That's coming up this hour. We also have our Entertainment Report, and we'll tell you all about this new Netflix series, Virgin River, and Annette O'Toole stars in that, and she has a Southern connection. We'll tell you about Miss O'Toole, and we'll also let you know some country music news and notes. Did you hear that Hank Williams Jr. is engaged? I'll try to tell you a little bit more about that, as well as we've got some new country music babies being born, and we've got all that juicy information, maybe even the weight of the newborns, coming in our entertainment report later this hour. In hour three today, a reminder that our Takapola storyteller, Jerry Short, will be right back here to talk about what's going on in Takapola land. So that's going to be fun. That's coming up hour three, as well as our Southern recipe of the day. And we're going to give a big old spotlight to baked potatoes, specifically stuffed baked potatoes, courtesy of the website asouthernsoul.com. That's headed your way, so come hungry when we arrive in hour three of our Y'all show to be involved with this program that shakes the Southland. It's easy to do so. We have a text line available 24/7, 615-208-4184, and we have an email account, mail@yall.com, mail@yall.com. We'd love to get your feedback, no matter what the day, no matter what the time. We're ready for y'all to be part of the show. Let's start off this hour of Y'all with the news headlines of the day. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about something internationally going on because it intrigues me. Right now, the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, has crossed his country's border with Russia on a train. His bulletproof train is evidently bombproof, or supposedly bombproof train, his relic of the past. And he's crossed the North Korean-Russian border, and he's going to be meeting with Vladimir Putin very soon, I think today, to be honest with you. Of course, the time zones, it's really weird where they're going to be meeting because they're over on the Pacific coast of Russia, just above North Korea, where this meeting is going to be taking place. And that's nearly a whole day ahead of Moscow. So whatever time it is, they're getting together for this meeting of the minds between North Korea and the Soviet Union. And they're going to be meeting in Vladivostok, which is, again, not far from North Korea. It's in Russia. And I've taken the time before to look up that Russian-North Korean border. It's really just nothing more than a railroad bridge that connects these two countries. They only have a couple of miles that they share a common border. And most of their border is right there with China around the corner, and the Chinese have observation posts that they can essentially watch everything that goes on between North Korea and Russia. And I've looked up at the, thanks to Google Maps, I've looked at the Russian train station that you come to if you cross that border going into Russia from North Korea, and it's a very run-down relic. I don't think too many people make that route between North Korea and Russia on a routine basis. And the Hermit Kingdom is not exactly a destination that a lot of Russians want to be going to. And the train station that is there is certainly a relic of the Soviet Union days. It's pretty creepy. And it's right there again with the Pacific Ocean nearby, which they call that officially. Let me pull up my map here. I don't want to leave off any of the names of our geography of our Asia-Pacific Rim. The Reed Pollock Bay. Why does that have an Anglo-sounding name there in that portion of the world? But it does. But Russia, and they're having to go to the North Koreans to be their buddies these days. And are they that desperate? Are they that desperate to get North Korean weapons, which evidently is a big part of the reason these two are even getting together? Of course, North Korea will do anything to get international attention, including firing off missiles and rockets and threatening nuclear war. But they've got an audience today of Vladimir Putin, it appears, and they're definitely getting one of their objectives met by the world talking about the Hermit Kingdom, North Korea, today. Soviet Union would be laughing that Russia would be going over to North Korea for help, and that is what it appears is going on today in that Pacific portion of Russia. Mother Russia. And that Trans-Siberian Railroad, I wonder if that's what Putin went on to get over there to the Pacific coast. I don't think so. But Kim Jong-un definitely took a train into Russia, as he is so concerned about his livelihood. It would take somebody with a lot of guts to take him out, because the North Korean leader has, I think, more security protection than even our President of the United States has with the Secret Service. Still fascinating to me that Trump in his time would meet with Putin, not with Putin, that would meet with Kim Jong-un in places like, was it Singapore? And he also met with him in Vietnam, and then he also met with him at the border, the DMZ. And I remember the time that they met, I think it was in Singapore. Trump took the time to show very briefly and from afar the beast. Do y'all know what the beast is? That's the limousine that Trump rides around in from the Secret Service. The Cadillac, I think, is what that thing is. I haven't seen too many Cadillacs that have the protection that the beast has when it's out traveling the world's highways, as it was when they had that summit in the Trump presidency. But I remember, I think Trump was trying to show just the door alone, the amount of depth the door had to protect against bullets and missiles and wherever else might be fired at the beast. How would you like to have a ride in the beast every day? Of course, most of the time President Trump now and other former presidents are riding around in SUVs. Not quite as well, I say they're not quite as protected as the actual limousine. You know, it's got the nickname the beast. But I'm not aware of it having another official nickname like the plane is Air Force One. Perhaps they can start calling the limousine Space Force One in honor of Trump. Makes sense to me. But that's what's going on from an international perspective today. The leaders of Russia and North Korea gathering to talk about weapons and who else, who the heck knows what they're talking about. Maybe they're going to be talking about what's going on here in this country with our presidential races. Maybe they're going to be talking about Trump's 91 indictments. For years, we had to hear all about how Trump was getting all this power and influence and money from Russia, and none of that was proven to be true. So maybe Putin is sitting there thinking, I wonder what they're going to accuse us of next. Now, Trump does have a love affair with Kim Jong-un, as he says, with the letters that they were writing, I don't think Trump would be writing letters, but Kim Jong-un certainly was writing love letters, his Trump called them, to him during the presidency. And some of those, I believe, were taken to Mar-a-Lago, and that's part of the case that he's got going on there with documents that should not have been, according to some, at Mar-a-Lago. Let's move on to other news headlines of the day here on the second hour news coverage of the Y'all Show Tuesday edition. Hurricane Lee, it looks like it's going to dodge America for the most part. And this hurricane, which has been a Category 5 and now Category 3, before the weekend, it's going to hit Atlantic Canada, according to forecasters, as a tropical storm, because as it moves north, it'll get into cooler waters, which will break it up to some degree, slow it down, and make it not as volatile. But the storm today, at least, still has winds of 115 miles per hour, as it's about 600 miles south of the nation of Bermuda. And by Sunday, Hurricane Lee is going to be forecasted to weaken into a tropical storm and hit Nova Scotia in Canada, according to AccuWeather. We'll keep our eye on that storm. And thank goodness this one's not coming ashore causing lots of destruction. But we've already in this country seen a record-setting year for billion-dollar weather disasters. In fact, after we had the Idalia come across Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas in the last couple of weeks, that ended up marking the 23rd weather extreme event in America in the year 2022. That was announced by the NOAA Monday, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as they put that information out, that this was number 23 on the weather extreme event. The previous high of 22 weather extreme events in a year happened in the year 2020. So far, this year's disasters have cost more than $57 billion, and 253 Americans have lost their lives in storms like Adaya, which was not a very, very costly storm from a live standpoint, but at least one person in Georgia did lose their life because of this hurricane when it went across South Georgia. But you factor in the devastating fires on Maui and other storms and flooding, and you've got 253 Americans who've lost their lives in these weather extreme events of 2023, and we're still 4 months away from wrapping up the year 2023. Did you hear about another international story? I'm getting all international with you here on this Tuesday, y'all show. So Morocco had that devastating earthquake over the weekend that cost thousands of lives, at least 1,000 officially reported dead in Morocco. The northwestern African continent had that terrible earthquake for the first time in a long time. They had an earthquake that powerful. And then, out of nowhere, Libya has flooding, and at least 2,000 Libyans have died of flooding in that North African country. So that northern section of Africa getting really devastated. We have to send our hearts and souls and prayers out to that section of the world really struggling, with thousands of people now losing their lives due to natural disasters in that portion of the world. One sports betting company is in a lot of trouble today because they were trying to capitalize on the September 11th terror attacks, a tragedy that killed 3,000 people back in 2001. DraftKings, the sports betting company, is now apologizing after they put out something Monday to entice people to bet on NFL and Major League Baseball games on the anniversary of 9/11. The Boston-based DraftKings put out a parlay that offered users a 9/11 themed promotion that if you bet on the Yankees, Mets, and New York Jets to all win, you would win in a big way. And after an outcry on social media from people offended by the promotion that they called Never Forget, DraftKings took it down and apologized. What if you actually made that bet that the Yankees, Mets, and Jets would all win Monday? And they ended up winning. I don't know. I really don't know who won or what, but pretty dumb decision by somebody there within DraftKings to even come up with such a idiotic promotion. Elsewhere in our headlines across the South today, we have an article from AL.com. The most common cancer diagnosis in the state of Alabama, which your state probably not much different. But a story coming out from the American Cancer Society's Statistics Center, and in the United States, breast cancer is the most common form of the more than 200 types of cancers. But in Alabama, the information a little bit different, because in Alabama, I need to pull this up. I'm sorry. Let me go to this American Cancer Society's Cancer Statistics Center and see what they have to say about some of our specific southern states. By the way, 1% of men can get breast cancer, according to the American Cancer Center and their society and their Cancer Statistics Center. New cases of cancer in 2023, both sexes combined, breast cancer was by far the highest, with over 300,000 new cases of breast cancer reported this year. Prostate cancer is trailing close behind with 288,000. Lung and bronchus cancer, 238 new cases in the country for both sexes. Colorectal cancer, 153,000. Melanoma, just under 100,000. Then urinary bladder cancer is another common cancer. In terms of deaths from cancers that have been reported on the American Cancer Society's Cancer Statistics Center, lung, and bronchus is the leading cause of death in the cancerous options, with over 127,000 Americans losing their lives to cancer in the last year. Colorectal cancer, just over 52,000. Pancreatic cancer, right at 50,000. Breast cancer is at 43,000 deaths in a year. Prostate cancer, right around 35,000. And then liver and bile duct cancer is just shy of 30,000. And that information coming out again from the Cancer Statistics Center of the American Cancer Society. And they've got breakdowns of all the states, and I'm trying to make it as easy as possible. And I can't tell you the types of cancer. I can just give you the numbers, so I'm just going to skip through a few of these. And for example, Alabama, as I was singling them out, Alabama just had over 10,000 cancer-related deaths in the last year. The state of Florida, 47,000 cancer-related deaths. Kentucky with just over 10,000 cancer deaths. Mississippi, just below 7,000. Tennessee with nearly 14,590 deaths reported of cancer. And then Virginia with 15,000 cancer deaths. If we could just find a cure, if we'd find a way to stop not one more person dying of cancer, we would be so much better off. Devastating disease. And you would think with all the time that we've had and money and research put into these various cancers, we would figure a way out. But we lose, again, the total number for the country. Just over 600,000 people have died of cancer in this last year in America. Lastly, in our headlines for this hour of the Y'all Show, we were talking earlier about some of the storms that hit the Southeast, and Idalia was one of those. Monday, President Joe Biden declared that three different counties in the state of Georgia are now eligible for disaster aid after Idalia passed through a few weeks back. The storm made landfall on the Florida coast August 30th and came ashore with 125 mile per hour winds in the Big Bend region of the panhandle of Florida. And now President Biden has approved disaster declarations for the Georgia counties of Cook, Glenn, and Lowndes County. These are all in South Georgia, just above the northern, just above the Florida line. Lowndes is where Valdosta is, and it had some of the worst damage from Idalia, with about 80 homes destroyed and more than 800 homes having major damage as winds in Valdosta reached 70 miles per hour. And that's the area of Georgia where the man was killed by a tree. I think a tree fell on him, I think in the road or something to that effect, but a disaster for sure. Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia had sent a letter to the Biden administration requesting aid from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and now the feds have approved that, and money will come to South Georgia for the recovery efforts of Hurricane Idalia, which came ashore again late August and affected southern states here early in this month of September. That's a wrap-up of some of the news headlines for this hour. When we come back on the Y'all Show, we've got our Southern Book Report. We're going to let you know about some of the top reads on the New York Times bestsellers list, as well as we'll let you hear from the lady that's got one of those top five reads, the author of The Breakaway, Jennifer Weiner. That interview is coming up next.
made of red. We're just lipstick promises. Was I easy to deceive? You were so easy to believe. I fell for your every kiss and your lipstick promises.
Don't faint when I tell you this, but that 1995 song there from George Dukas, sung by a alumnus of Vanderbilt University, Anchor Down. Yeah, George Dukas. A guy that studied finance when he was there on West End, but somehow Music Row just around the corner interested him too. And he had that top 10 song there, Lipstick Promises, on the Capitol Records imprint. Back in the good old days of the 90s. We're back on Y'all, and instead of talking about hit music, we're going to talk about some hit books as we continue on with this Tuesday program about the Southeast. And let's go to the New York Times bestsellers list, as we have the list of the combined print and ebook fiction category for the NYT. Rebecca Yarros's book, Fourth Wing, is still way up there at number one. Violet Sorengal is urged by the commanding general, who is also her mother, to become a candidate for the elite Dragon Riders. Again, this is in the fiction category, and Fourth Wing is number one this week on the New York Times bestsellers list. Also in the NYT list, Hannah Nicole Mayer's Assistant to the Villain makes its debut. It's number two on the New York Times fiction list this week. And in the book Assistant to the Villain, Avi Sage gets a job doing unsuspected office duties for the most infamous villain in the Kingdom of Renadon. Assistant to the Villain, it's out right now. Coming in at number three on the New York Times bestsellers list, Nashville author Tom Lake, or actually the author is Ann Patchett. The book is called Tom Lake. It's been out just over a month, and in the book Tom Lake, Padgett writes about how three daughters who return to their family orchard in the spring of 2020 learn about their mother's relationship with a famous actor, Tom Lake. It's out at number three in the fiction category of the New York Times bestsellers list. Freda McFadden's, her brand new book is out. It's called The Coworker, and in the book that McFadden has penned, it is about how after an accountant is murdered, a sales rep at a nutritional supplement company gets caught in a game of cat and mouse. The Coworker, it's new, and it's at number four from Freda McFadden. Now, pay close attention, because this next book, which checks in at number five on the New York Times fiction category of great books and hot-selling books, we're going to hear from this author in just a second. It is by Jennifer Weiner, The Breakaway, number five in the combined print and ebook fiction category. Weiner's book is about how, as a wedding to a man she met in childhood weight loss camp approaches, Abby goes on a cycling trip to Niagara Falls in a group that includes an old fling. Ooh, The Breakaway. And we'll hear from Weiner in just a second. Real quick, though, looking at the nonfiction books from the New York Times bestsellers list, still way up there on the number one spot for nonfiction, David Grahn's Killers of the Flower Moon. Number two, Bessel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score. Peter Attia and Bill Guilford's Outlive is at number three. The Robert Oppenheimer book, American Prometheus, number four in the nonfiction category. And Grahn's back at number five on the New York Times bestsellers list with his nonfiction work, The Wager, at number five. And those are your bestsellers from the New York Times. Now, let's go back to Jennifer Weiner. Her book doing quite well. In fact, it's number five in the hardcover fiction category from the New York Times, but it's also combined print and ebook fiction number five, too, from this Louisiana-born author, Jennifer Weiner. She was born, I think, in the Fort Polk area in southwest Louisiana, and that's where she was born, on an army base there in DeRidder, Louisiana. And born Jennifer Agnes Weiner. She says on her website, jenniferweiner.com, she has no idea why her parents named her Jennifer Agnes Weiner. But she, not long after her birth in Louisiana, settled in New England as they moved to Connecticut. And she went to public schools in New England. She graduated from Simsbury High School and then went on to Princeton, where she majored in English. Go Princeton Tigers there. And ended up starting into a career of writing and journalism and more. And she's had quite an extensive career. Again, this latest book from Jennifer Weiner is called The Breakaway. And she graduated, by the way, summa cum laude with a degree in English Lit from Princeton in 1991. Then she worked at a newspaper in central Pennsylvania, as well as in Kentucky and in Philadelphia. She was a columnist for a while for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Jennifer Weiner, her name J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R, last name W-E-I-N-E-R. Her website is jenniferweiner.com. You can get to know much more about this, as she describes herself, novelist, feminist, and she's a mother, Jennifer Weiner. She was recently interviewed as part of a book discussion with Author Events. That's the YouTube channel. You can go find this interview, talking about The Breakaway. And one thing Jennifer Weiner has done throughout her last few years, she's been heavy into cycling. And so this new book that is out, that she's penned, centers around a bicycling trip to Niagara Falls. And Jennifer Weiner likes to get out there. Kudos to her. You got to have guts to be a cyclist, mainly because you got to deal with idiots on the highway. Not you, but people in cars. But cycling is a big part of her life, and that's why in The Breakaway, the new book, it really revolves around a cycling trip to Niagara Falls. And an old fling is part of that. I wonder what they get up to. I wonder if the water flowing across Niagara makes their love flow like it used to. And this, according to this preface for this book, she's got a upcoming wedding to a man she met at a childhood weight loss camp. So she's engaged, and then she goes on this cycling trip, and the sparks flow, evidently. You'll just have to check it out, The Breakaway. But right now, what I want you to do is check out Jennifer Weiner, as she spoke here recently at an author event, and the YouTube channel Author Events has this clip. Let's go in and hear from this Louisiana-born novelist, feminist, and mom.
I think as soon as I realized that, like, writing was a career that was available to living people, that was something I wanted. Like, as soon as I realized that people who wrote books, like, walked among us, and, you know, that this was something I could do, that was what I wanted. And I was very, very lucky, because I did have teachers who encouraged me the whole way through. I went to public schools in Connecticut, and I, you know, from the time I was like in first grade, I remember my teacher like giving me extra paper and letting me stay in from recess, which was good because like I loved writing and I did not get along with other kids at that point in my life. That took a little while, but you know, but the other thing is this: before I was a writer, I was a reader. And when people ask, like, what's your one piece of advice for people who want to write, I say you have to read. You have to love stories and language and fiction and nonfiction and poetry and every kind of writing. And, you know, you just have to, like, fill up on words and go to your library, go to your bookstore, just read everything you can. But I feel incredibly, incredibly lucky that I had so many people who encouraged me and that I've gotten to make this my job.
All right, that is novelist Jennifer Weiner talking recently at an author event, and you can go check out her new read. Again, it is number 5 on the New York Times combined print and ebook fiction category this week, The Breakaway, from this Louisiana-born lady, although most of her life was spent in Yankee Land. and she sounds a little bit Yankee-ish. But I bet the book's pretty good, especially if you like cycling, as Miss Weiner evidently enjoys. And that is a look at our Southern Book Report for this week here on the show that shakes up all things Southern. When we come back, we've got an entertainment report. Hank Williams Jr. engaged. Congratulations, Bo Cephas. We'll have info on that, plus some country music babies are heading our way. And we'll let you know about Annette O'Toole. She's a Southerner that's on the Netflix series Virgin River. We'll have that info right after this.
I looked over at my pillow, but your face wasn't there. And I don't smell the perfume you used to wear. And I don't see your blouse or jeans, or your pretty white cotton gown. And I've looked all over hell, but heaven can't be found.
And we're back on Y'all, talking about all things Southern with a little Bo Cephas music to bring us back. And Bo Cephas in the news. I told you going into break, hang on, we've got some Hank Williams Jr. engagement news to tell you about. And y'all, some breaking news overnight. Hank Williams Jr. is now married. He married Brandy on September 9th. That would have been Saturday. Married her at the Enon Baptist Church in Banks, Alabama. Banks, Alabama is the hometown of Hank Williams Jr.'s mom, Audrey Williams. And he and his then fiance Brandy got married in front of a small group of family and friends on Saturday. And according to people.com, these two have known each other for about 20 years. They met in 2003 originally. Brandy is 43, Hank Williams Jr. is 74. Age is just a number. But yes, we were going to come on and tell you after the break that Hank Jr. and this lady Brandy were engaged, and that just got broke the other day that they were engaged. And now Mr. and Mrs. Hank Williams Jr., Hank and Brandy Williams, got married in Banks, Alabama. And then they had a reception at Kendall Hall in Troy, Alabama. They got engaged on Mother's Day. And again, they'd been friends since the year 2003. Hank Williams Jr. lost his wife, Mary Jane Thomas, back in March of 2022. They'd been married for 32 years. And of course, his daughter also died in a car crash during COVID. It's been the last couple of years been really hell on Hank Williams Jr. But how about the fact that he and his new bride, Brandy, are together? Just a feel-good story to start our entertainment report. And I don't know where Brandy's from. I don't even know her last name. I can't report to you on that. But her last name's now Williams. And I guess she'll be hanging out around Paris, Tennessee, where Hank primarily lives. Of course, Hank loves to live in deer stands and boats fishing and wherever he likes to go do his outdoor thingy. But a very, very happy weekend for Bo Cephas, as he's now married. I think this is his fourth marriage, if my numbers are correct. But a Alabama wedding for the Alabama guy. Yeah. What's this song say? I was born on... No, his song says, I was born in Louisiana on the Texas line. And I don't know if that's true. I forget. You know, his dad was part of the Louisiana hayride in Shreveport, and I'm not so sure he wasn't born in Alabama, because his mother and father were both from Bama. So let's Let's check out Hank Williams Jr.'s bio real quick, because this is important, though. Maybe he just put in that line about being born in Louisiana just because it helped sell records. I'm not totally sure. According to, yeah, it says he was born in Shreveport, May 26, 1949. And his current marriage is his fourth, as he was married for the first time in 1971 to a lady named Gwen, then to Becky for a number of years, and then Mary Jane Thomas, who he married her in 1990, and then she died tragically of an outpatient surgery type thing went wrong, and she died in 2022. But he's now got Brandy, his new lady. Beautiful couple, the Williamses. If y'all want to send your wedding gifts to them, just send them on to me, and I'm sure I can find old Bo Cephas and pass them on to him, whatever that might be. I think the greatest wedding gift for the Williams would be just your thumbs up saying, way to go, Bo Cephas. Make some new music. In fact, I'm not so sure I didn't hear something recently on the radio from him. It was either an album track or something, but it sounded good. I was impressed by old Bo Cephas, if that's indeed him, and I'm sure it was. I mean, you can't really mistake Hank Williams Jr. with anybody else out there. According to his discography, the last song he had out as a single was Take a Knee, Take a Hike. I like that one right there. Hopefully he's got some new music. You know, maybe Brandy will inspire him. I wonder how they met. What did I say? She's 43 years old. And if he met her in 2003, that would have been 20 years ago. So she'd have been 23. I wonder. I don't know the connection. I don't know the connection. But anywho, Hank Williams Jr. married. Let's move on to other entertainment news of the day here on the Y'all Show. And we will move on from a great Alabama singer and Hank Williams Jr. to a great Mississippi singer and Jimmy Buffett. And his wife, Jane Slogsvall, is now paying tribute to Mr. Margaritaville, as she says that every cell in his body was filled with joy. She shared that message on Jimmy Buffett's website. Jimmy died September 1st, and she wanted to thank on Jimmy's website a whole world of people for their support following his September 1st death. She said, as Jimmy said a few months ago, growing old is not for sissies. These last few years have been unimaginably challenging for Jimmy and me, and we're definitely not sissies. She and Jimmy were married for 45 years. And Miss Buffett, Jane, described Jimmy Buffett's legion of fans, the Parrot Heads, as family. So some very heartfelt sentiment coming in from Mrs. Jimmy Buffett, Jane. Jimmy Buffett is survived by his children, Savannah, Sarah, and Cameron Buffett. Also, we want to tell you about the Netflix series. Have you seen on season 5, Virgin River? It's back for season 5. The series follows Mel, a heartbroken nurse, played by Alexandra Breckenridge, as she moves from L.A. to the fictional Northern California town to start over after the death of her husband. One of the actresses in this Netflix series, Virgin River, is Annette O'Toole. And you can check her out in this series. She used to be on Nash Bridges. She is a Houston, Texas-born actress that started working in the 1960s. She's 71 years old. And again, in this latest Netflix series, you can find her as she's got the role of Hope McCray. Annette O'Toole, who also has appeared in various films and TV shows. Some of her films include Women Who Kill. She's been in the movie Superman 3 as Lena Lang, Cat People, and one of her first roles was One-on-One, where she played the role of Janet Hayes. Annette O'Toole, the Texan actress. And we'll let you check her out on Netflix. Also, congratulations to Maddie and Tay's Maddie Marlowe. She's got her first child. Congratulations to her and Country Music News. And Kimberly Perry of the band Perry, she and her husband Johnny Costello have welcomed a new son. And that's our entertainment report for this hour. We'll see you back here for more fun in hour two. Hour three of the Y'all Show for this Tuesday has arrived. As we cover everything Southern, we are Y'all, powered by y'all.com. Our show available on awesome radio stations as well as in podcast form, as we're on Spotify, iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, as well as Apple Podcasts and Apple iTunes. And if that's not enough, if you're just looking for that coup de grace, the Y'all Show is also available at y'all.com, the South's homepage. Yeah, buddy. Got a busy third hour. We're going to have our buddy, the Takapola Storyteller, back on with us in just a few minutes. And ain't no telling what Jerry Short's going to tell us when he drops by in this third hour. And also before the hour concludes, we've got our Southern recipe of the day. Going to tell you all about the best stuffed baked potato from the website asouthernsoul.com. asouthernsoul.com's got their recipe for best stuffed baked potatoes. Yummy. Get out the butter, the chives, the sour cream, and the heart attack. Get it all out, y'all. It's coming before we get out of here on this Tuesday edition. Glad that you are part of Y'all. If you would like to text us, we have our 24-hour-a-day text line that's set up for you, 615-208-4184. Our email address, mail@y'all.com. We've got a few headlines that we're going to get to before we bring on our Takapola Storyteller, as well as our stuffed potato talk that's coming up here on this third, on this Tuesday, third hour of our Tuesday edition. So today, the big headline nationwide is the fact that we have now reached our 23rd weather extreme event in America this year. And that's caused about $60 billion in damages and has claimed at least 253 lives, all right here in 2023. Now, last year, we didn't reach this number the whole year. In fact, the highest record of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's numbers of what they call weather extreme events, the highest had been 22, and that was a number set back in 2020. And so we've got most of September still left. We've got all of October, November, and December, and we've already had this number of storms happen. Now we're dodging a bullet from a hurricane standpoint, at least America is. It appears that Hurricane Lee is going to head up toward Nova Scotia and miss out on the Atlantic seaboard of the United States. That's fantastic news. Forecast this weekend to hit Nova Scotia with tropical storm force winds. So our friends to the north, we wish you the best on that. And then I'll let you know that we already have Hurricane Margot making headlines. Hurricane Margot has formed in the Atlantic, and it could be our next storm that would be impacting America in the coming days, as Hurricane Margot becomes the fifth named hurricane of the season. It's located currently about 1,000 miles southwest of the Azores out in the Atlantic. It had maximum sustained winds of 85 miles per hour. So a new storm to be on the lookout for. And also in our headlines across the nation today, and the South is where we like to focus in on, but this one affects the whole country. And this one really ticks me off to have to tell you about this. So evidently, at McDonald's, you soon won't be able to make your own drink at McDonald's. As McDonald's says, the self-serve fountain drink stations will soon be a thing of the past. Come on, McDonald's. I love going there and getting my own Coca-Cola. McDonald's usually has really good Coca-Cola. But McDonald's is going to phase out drink machines in dining rooms across the country. Fewer customers are going into dining rooms. I'm the exception. I like me a McDonald's dining room. As customers are opting for takeout or digital orders. And so McDonald's will be transitioning away from self-serve beverage stations and dining rooms across the U.S. by the year 2032. So we still have nearly a decade, according to this statement from McDonald's. The change is intended to create a consistent experience for both customers and crew across all ordering points. You know, it's McDonald's that has those robots that serves up drinks. I don't know if the other fast food chains has such a thing, but McDonald's oftentimes has a robot that takes care of filling up the beverage. And in a lot of McDonald's locations, you've seen the self-serve drink machines, or as this article calls them, soda fountains. We don't call them soda fountains in Dixie. Okay, they're machines. And they've evidently already been removed. And no more going up and getting that Coca-Cola. Although, let's be honest, it takes extra work for your drink machines to taste really good. The McDonald's that I go to probably more than half the time, the Coca-Cola tastes a little off. It tastes a little bit like sap. And I think that comes from not cleaning it like they should. Those drink machines require daily cleaning. And if you get lazy, you got bad tasting soda. And that's not a good thing. But I was at another big chain Monday evening, and I like, if you haven't figured this out by now, I like eating out at fast food places pretty regularly. I love my local restaurants too, but those chains are so easy to just whip in there, get you a quick meal and move on. And on Monday evening, for example, I didn't have a lot of time and I didn't really feel like traveling too far. So the easiest thing for me would be to go down the street to one of these national sandwich chains. And their Coke machine is usually spot on. So maybe they need to go down to the McDonald's and give them a lesson on having a great taste in Coca-Cola. And the crazy part, I don't need to be having Coca-Cola anyway. Most of us probably don't need to be having 5,000 calorie soft drinks when we're having our meal, but boy, do they not taste good when they got their thing going. Also want to tell you that Yum Brands, which owns fast food chains Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, and KFC, they've also recently mentioned the possibility of stores focusing on digital sales only in the future. They won't even have, in those cases, you won't have the ability to go in and sit down and eat. That's wrong, y'all. That is wrong. What are people like me going to do in the future when I don't have a place to go in and eat? I had to eat lunch yesterday. I went to a place that doesn't even have a sit-down option. And I had a great-tasting lunch. I really did. Barbecue place, by the way. But man, it would have been so much better if I'd been able to sit down at a table, and even if it were outside, and been able to go and get my refills, maybe have some delicious Coca-Cola. Instead, I had to have half and half tea, which is good. I love me some tea. But man, we're in bad shape if McDonald's is going to phase out the self-serve drink fountains that they've got. Oh, this is going to take me a couple decades to get over. Hopefully, it won't be quite as tough on you. What's also tough for me to have to get over is the fact that I'm going to have to shut up here for a few minutes because the Takapola Storyteller is coming to join me. He is Jerry Short, and we're going to have a great discussion about something when he steps in here in just a second. It's more of the Y'all Show. It's coming right up. And we are back on this Tuesday Y'all Show, and I'm John Rawl. I've got a few stories to tell, but man, I don't have anything like this guy that's joining us now. It's the Takapola Storyteller, Jerry Short, back on with us here to talk about all things in his life through the last couple of hundred years. Jerry, good to see you again.
Hey, John. Man, it's good to see you. I'm glad I'm still hanging in here.
Yes, you are. You are hanging in here. Jerry is no spring chicken. You've been around a few decades.
Been around the block.
Yes, you have. And here at the Y'all Show, you can catch this show, of course, on great radio stations. We're also available in podcast form, as we're on Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn app, plus we're on Apple iTunes and Apple Podcasts, and we're at y'all.com. We have our y'all.com that presents this show. Y'all.com is on Facebook, so please go by there and like and do all the things that you've got to do on Facebook to keep up with y'all.com, the South's homepage. One thing we do not have, and maybe this is a bad thing, but maybe it's a good thing, we don't have, Jerry, a Y'all Show Facebook page. And maybe there's a reason for that. Jerry, as I said, you're not exactly just starting out in life.
No.
But you seem like it, based on your social media activity at times.
Well, you know, I play around, let's say.
And you're not alone.
I don't think Wall Street's calling yet.
You're not alone. My point of talking about this subject with you is, you know, you were in school back in the Eisenhower administration. Let's just leave
back
it
in
that.
The one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah, in those days. And you've got a whole, and you're not alone, as I said, you've got a whole group of people your same age bracket that live and die by Facebook mostly, but social media outlets too. And you're an example of that. I'm sure you're going to say,
well, there's a lot of Facebook.
I thought you were going to say, well, I'm not on that very
much. I do a lot of posts on Facebook. But I do, you know, sometimes I'm a little selfish. I post stuff to aggravate people sometimes.
Oh, you do.
Know? And I post stuff for people to enjoy. Then I post my grandkids.
Who is your audience?
Who is my audience were mostly, it looks like, as I've looked back at some of the people that are on Facebook with me, it becomes more ladies, more women, a lot of women my age that got, you know, high-tech into the internet systems. But men don't seem to have done that. You know, we kind of had to be out there working most of the time. If you're talking about internet, I'll tell you about when they first, when I was working with International Paper Company, and originally we did everything by hand in computer, and not computer, but by adding machine, maybe, you know? So we decided to go to computers, and we had an expert in the regional office that was making the rounds to districts and all. And when he first come to ours, now this is like cruising timber. And to cruise timber, you know, you had to tally every tree, you had to mark it down, you had to say what kind it was just really detailed. Then you had to draw a curve, and then you had to grade it, and then you had to, that would get your heights and diameters and classes and all this kind of
stuff. All this not on the computer.
That was all by hand, which it would take you hours to work something up if you weren't pretty swift at it. But I could come with form class pretty quick. I didn't have to figure all that.
What?
Form class is a
form class.
That's a place that a tree will pop and snap at a certain height according to the size with a certain wind velocity, and you would lose a fiber that you would make merchantable timber out of. but I was pretty good at just glancing at that without going through reading all those things with my height gauge and my other stuff, you know. And I just put down like 76%, you know, I thought that's where it would pop, or 71%, you know, and I'd usually keep it 73%, 74%, 75%. But what you brought in the computer situation, we had this guy that was really an expert. And it was back in the day of the, the Wang computer system? It was one of the first ones out. It was green. It had an awful green color. And he had come up with these handheld devices that we took to the woods and the timber with us to cruise, and we had to put codes in it. Like, let's say, a pine tree. Normally, I would put a dot on a sheet of paper for one pine that's a 10-inch diameter, that's so tall and so, you know, bark thickness so much. But when you go taking this computer, handheld computer, to the woods with you, you're looking at the doggone thing and you got to put in a number. So that pine number, you got a special number for pine, oak, red oak mix, whatever, you know, right on down the line. So you got all those things that you had to put in the computer. Take you forever. I remember this team I went with out to do it. It was a whole team of us at this district. And we went out to do 10 plots, which I would normally knock out in 30 minutes by myself and get the same tally that I got off of the computer, you know, but later. But anyway, well, we all went out and we did that, and we come back into the office. He was going to show us how to work it up. And so we're sitting there, and we got to take all these things, and we plug them in. And we have to shoot all that information. Now, like I said, a pine tree before with me was a dot for whatever diameter class it was. And that's the diameter breast high, you know, whatever size tree it was. And the number for that would be, like a pine would be 001.12 if it was a 12-inch or something. You had to write all that in there. Before, I just hit it in that spot that I had on my cruise sheet, you know.
Yeah.
And we're in there, and it's taking forever. And he's running all this stuff through, and he's going to get us the answer to how much volume was on this 10 plots. And you do a 10%, which is 37-foot radius.
I didn't know that.
And that's what it is. You should have known that. I can't believe you didn't know that. But anyway, I may not have known it either.
I'm sitting by a modern-day Einstein, but, at least in the timber industry.
But anyway, you would do that. And I'm watching, and it's going on forever, and everybody's gathered around him. And I finally just got enough, and I went back to my office, and I did it by hand real quick. And then I come back and stood there and waited for them to finish getting the volume for that 10 plots, which equivalent to 10 acres. And they got it, and he said, well, what we got here is so many board feet of this, and so many cords of pulpwood of this, and so much gum here, and so much here, and all that. And the average height was 72 feet or such and such. And so then I laid my sheet out there in front of him, and I said, does that match up? And it was identical.
Really?
Yeah. And I'd been back to the back after putting up with about an extra hour or two to do the computer. But computers have come a zillion miles since then, I understand
okay.
that. But
well,
that's how it started. And that's how I started not becoming orientated to that kind of situation.
But back then, you weren't showing off pictures of your grandkids. You weren't showing off what you had for supper last night. Things like that.
No.
Isn't that more exciting than...
Well, I mean, it lets family that lives away from you know. That's one reason I like to do it. It lets them know how they're doing and such a thing. And then, of course, you can just talk back and forth on one, too, you know. You can talk across the ocean. It's just like you're right here next door to each other. And so computers are not something I'm going to knock. But I'm not at the same time going to say, hey, my life revolves around me playing a game on a computer.
Well, I want to talk to you more about social media stuff than computers.
All right.
Because I'm trying to really take a deep dive into why people your age, your age group, why y'all really like it?
Well, I have a lot of guy friends that don't do it much, you know. Their wives do it for them. And I notice that they're, on Facebook, their name might be, if her name's Ann and his is Bill, it might be Ann Bill.
Okay.
You know, or something like that. But I know he's not doing anything. But he may read it, and he may comment, and then I may get it back from them as a couple. Mm-hmm. But I'm not getting it back from the guy individually, even though sometimes it'll read that way, but it's not actually that way. So
yeah, I'm guilty of that in my previous life. My late wife, she and I shared a Facebook account, and it was her name and my name, and you hardly ever saw anything about me on this joint account because I wasn't the one posting.
Yeah, right.
But it did. It did get funny one time because somebody brought up on that account, hey, why do we not see John ever on this thing?
Yeah.
So she ended up putting a picture, and man, that thing lit up. People were like, oh there he is.
That's
There's the general. Where's he been?
Yeah, where's he been?
And she kind of got probably a little jealous of that.
I imagine so.
And then I think she divorced me within a couple of days.
No, y'all got a separate account.
No, I never did. We never did. You can't blame Facebook on the demise of that particular marriage, but it certainly has brought down plenty of marriages.
Oh, I'm sure. It's been probably a lot of stuff has been put on there that shouldn't have been put on there that was your spouse might have saw it. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, they can hack into anything this day and time. So, I mean, you get messages. I get stuff that I don't have a clue what it is sometimes.
Yeah.
And I get people that get on my Facebook and ask me to be friends with them. And they'll like things that I've posted, and I don't know I don't know them from Adam's house cat, you know. But it's fun, somewhat. And like I said earlier, I like to post a lot of stuff, and I get political a lot of times also. And I notice one thing I do notice that I don't get as many likes or comments back if I get too political. Now, if it's something family oriented or something really nice, I'm liable to get, say, 50 back. But if I write something political about Trump's mugshot the other day, I might not get 2 back.
Do you think that's because people are scared to comment, or is Meta censoring you?
No, I've never been semi-censored but one time, and it was for saying the word B-U-T-T.
And then what?
That's right. I saw somebody had posted something where a gentleman had knocked a woman down. And I'd said, in return, I text back that, and I don't even know who it was. I text back and I said, if I'd have been there and saw that, I'd have knocked his butt off.
You didn't use the A word.
No,
used the B.
No, no.
And they
cut it off, and they said, you're being checked now. And, you know, they laid the whole program out. Then they sent me all the information on what I was allowed to say, what I was allowed to do, and what I was not allowed to do. And then that went on for about 2 hours or 3 or 4. And I looked back over there later, and they had put it back on. But I guess it passed after. So somebody's checking you all the time.
Do you think it's a person or a robot?
Well, this day and time, if you'd asked me that a year ago, I'd have said a person, definitely. But that person might have been in the Philippines or might have been in India or somewhere. But today I'm saying it's probably mechanical machinery, or, you know, they're programming these things now to, it's almost getting frightening.
Yeah, because they shouldn't do what they did to you over the use of the word butt.
I know. And that's all they keyed in on was that one word, because they don't use knock, or I'd have knocked him down. They don't use down. They just bound to keyed in on B-U-T-T.
So you were just down for a couple of hours.
Well, they went over the whole thing. They was checking it out.
Did they tell you that it would only be a few hours?
No, they didn't tell me at the time.
Did you think it might be?
No, they said you've been, you know, it's taken off for now.
When you thought in your head that this could be a couple of days, weeks, maybe forever.
I know a lot of people it's happened to. And you do too.
Yeah.
Probably. So, but at that time, they checked it. But they sent me all the data that they had from the things that I could do and couldn't do. And I kind of semi-read over them, and I thought, well, you go ahead. You may lose me as an account, but it'll be okay. But if I can't say that, I don't need to be here. I'm going to go to X, and you know, and get off of Facebook. But
well, Facebook's had a monopoly for sure. And we're talking with our Takapola storyteller, Jerry Short, here on today's Y'all Show. A buddy of mine has been a successful businessman, and he started his business August of 2019. I actually went to his place in East Tennessee to help him get going. And he was doing quite well. And then something called COVID, or the China virus, arrived.
I'm going to call it China virus. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, that arrived in March of 2020. Well, his business was a business that had products that, having masks for sale, fell right in line with his business. So he started marketing on Facebook that you could come to his store and get masks. People were needing masks. Well, at that time, Facebook came out with a rule that you couldn't try to market masks. And you know what they did? Not only did they kick him off of Facebook, they kicked him off permanently. This guy, he does not
have
a, he cannot get back on Facebook.
And that's 2021.
That was 2020. All he was doing was trying to sell masks on Facebook. They permanently kicked him off. And then a couple of months later, they reversed their decision on trying to sell masks, but they haven't reversed
his. They haven't reversed him getting
back. No! I mean, that's just
wrong. Well, see, they've got a section on Facebook where you can sell items. You know, there's a section down below.
Marketplace,
yeah. You can go to Marketplace, and there's people all around your neighborhood that are selling stuff that, I've bought a few items.
I have, too. You're the reason I bought a few things.
I know. I mean, so you
can
do that.
Worked out pretty good.
What's the difference? I don't see any difference because they'll be advertising. Some of them will be a car dealership.
That chair you're sitting in right now came from Facebook Marketplace.
See what I'm talking about? You know? And like I said, sometimes it'll be a car dealership. You know, we've got one like this. If this GMC pickup don't fit your needs, we've got another one. Well, you know where it's coming from. It's coming from a GMC dealership in Tupelo or Nashville or somewhere.
Yeah. Like I said, the unfairness, and I'm sure people listening to me know themselves, or maybe know someone just like my friend who's been put in permanent Facebook jail.
Oh, I know.
For something like that. Then you mentioned you're not afraid on your Facebook account to get out there and get a little political.
No, I get a little bit too more political than I should sometimes.
Why are you being hesitant?
I'm not. I'm talking about that I should, because of what they might do. Not because I'm scared or anything.
I think you're a little scared.
Well, you know, some of the stuff I've done, I shouldn't be scared, but if I am, I apologize. But anyway, you know, you can tell that other people are hesitant, as you brought up, to respond, because they're afraid if they respond. I've got people that will respond to me about stuff just really simplistically the same thing, but they won't respond if I say something like, I think now you're required to say Civil War, you're not required to say War Between the States, there's you know, I'm talking Southern. A lot of times I put
Mr. Lincoln's War?
Mr. Lincoln.
War of Northern Aggression? Is that allowed?
That's what I call it. Now, they didn't, I put it on there this week, as a matter of fact, the War of Northern Aggression, which has turned into the War of Government Aggression. But anyway, it wasn't deleted or anything. So,
have you seen them delete stuff that you posted?
No, just that one thing, that one item. And I have gone overboard. You know, obviously I've never used any profanity or anything. But my gosh, I think they have dating sites on these things.
Facebook has dating. I've used it.
Oh, okay. I'm married.
I've had a pretty good date.
Anyway.
Thanks to that. And then I've had 99% of the other options have been complete disasters.
Yeah. Well, that's
meaning I didn't even have a date.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. If you can do those things and can't say BUTT, you know, I don't know who's monitoring this operation.
Let me ask you a question. Since you happen to live in a small town here in the South, you probably have a lot of followers of your Facebook page, right?
I have a lot more than I realize, you know, because I'll look and see how many people looked at something.
Yeah.
And it'll be a lot more than responding.
But my question to you is, since you're talking about how people, when you get political in nature, they don't like you on Facebook, but do these same people see you out around town and comment on what you've posted?
It seems like there's a word called hypocritical. I think a lot of these people become hypocrites. and they don't want to respond back to self, thinking that it might bring them in to the same conversation that I've started.
Yeah.
But around town, they're just like, good old boy.
But did they come up to you and say, man, I love that post?
No,
well,
I don't. See, like I said.
Well, maybe they're not hypocrites.
It seems like most of, no, I think the hypocrites by not responding, because they respond to anything else. But if it's too political or something like that, they do not respond. And by them not responding, you know, to something, why wouldn't they not respond to it? Because we're friends. They should feel the same way I feel. But they won't even put a like sign down there.
I don't know. Have you ever been completely blown away by someone you thought was as close a friend as you could possibly be, that was your brother and or sister in some ways, to find out that y'all didn't agree politically?
Certainly. And it shocked me, and I'm sure I shocked them. But, that happens too. And, and I'm sure that can carry over to a Facebook account. But at the same time, I would like for them to be straightforward and out in the open with their feelings. You know, they can give me I don't approve, you know, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. Or something, you know. Just if we're going to have a conversation, and when that's what I feel like it is. If I post a post about a granddaughter playing some softball, just say, because that's going on right now. If I post that, and they happen not to like the school, let's say if it's like Ole Miss or Mississippi State or LSU or somewhere, they won't respond if I say something negative about the school they like. Let's go that way. I've had that happen a lot of times, where I've used a close friend that preferred a different university in sports. And they'll comment to me about everything else. But they will not comment about if I say anything about that sport at that school they like. So I think it's a lot of people that, become kind of hypocritical, because if I'm around them, mm-hmm. they're not going to say anything, you know, that negative. You know, I could bring in history, but it's no need. But let's say somebody had a great victory over you and had this and that kind of stuff, and then you comment about it and say something, they won't comment back, you know. And I think people, you know, but to your face, they would probably comment and say, yeah, we got lucky on that or something, you know.
Jerry Short, glad that you are not in Facebook jail, but maybe you just need to take, just like me, a nice little break from Facebook.
I've been thinking about it. If I don't get any more response for some of my political stances, which looks like they're fixing now.
I think you're just auditioning for Newsmax.
I think they're on
the
verge.
That's what you're trying to do on Facebook. Jerry Short, thank you. We'll talk to you again next week.
I'm all for it. Let's do it.
More of the Y'all Show as we wrap up this Tuesday edition right around the corner. Thank you, Zach Brown Band, for bringing us back as we're going to wrap up this Tuesday Y'all Show with a little food talk. And Zach Brown Band, you know, he used to work at a restaurant on Lake Oconee there east of Atlanta. And I should have taken him up on his offer. He once invited me to come to that restaurant when he was, honestly, I think he was cooking at that restaurant. He didn't own it at that time. And I don't know how trained Zach is as a chef, but Zach, if you're listening, you can fire up a delicious steak for me anytime. I'll take you up on that offer from 20 years ago, if you don't mind. And while you're at it, Zach, I know you have nothing else going on.
fire me up a delicious baked potato. And it's baked potatoes, what we have in mind as we wrap up this Tuesday Y'all show, as we have gone to the website asouthernsoul.com for a recipe, best stuffed baked potatoes. Now, part of the reason we're bringing this up is I had a delicious, delicious baked potato on Monday. Hadn't had one of those in a while. Honestly, I'm not sure if they're the best thing in the world to eat from a health standpoint, but they sure are good. Well, A Southern Soul, if you're not familiar with this website, I wasn't familiar until someone pointed out to me that they have a heck of a baked potato recipe. A Southern Soul.com. Go there, as they have delicious Southern-inspired recipes. And on this site, you can find hundreds of delicious, easy-to-make recipes that embrace the charm and warmth of Southern hospitality. Whether you're a seasoned cook or a beginner in the kitchen, you found what you need right here at Southern Soul. That's what is stamped right there on the top of their website. And how about some of the recipes that are featured, some of the photos I'm looking at on the website? Easy homemade spaghetti sauce, crock pot thickened, crock pot chicken thighs, crock pot Hawaiian meatballs. That looks yummy. And then they've got a recipe right there on their homepage featured right now. Sheet pan hamburger steak with mushrooms and onions. Yummy. And more recipes, if you don't mind, before I start talking about baked potatoes, some more recipes featured at asouthernsoul.com. They've got easy buffalo chicken flatbread pizza. You know, if every marriage had someone, either the guy or the woman, in the kitchen cooking up these things, I don't think there would be something called divorce. Because food makes everybody happy, and these recipes would make me happy. Future wife. Next recipe. How about this one? Creamy white bean garlic dip is a featured recipe on asouthernsoul.com, as well as quick and easy ground beef chili. Oh, you know, chilies might be what I need to go grab today. Looks delicious. And another recipe that they got here featured is why I went to this website to start with. They've got featured best stuffed baked potatoes. Donna Mullins has submitted this. And actually, let me correct her name. It's not Donna. I'm sure I'm not the first one to make this mistake. It's Donya Mullins. D-O-N-Y-A. Haven't quite seen that. And Donya is the lady behind asouthernsoul.com, as she loves to cook and entertain. And she says, here at Southern Soul, I celebrate the essence of Southern cooking and living. This website is dedicated to providing you with delicious, easy-to-make recipes, inspiring home decor ideas, and helpful tips for daily life. And I'm trying to find out where she lives. I haven't been able to figure that out. But her name behind this site again is Donya, D-O-N-Y-A. We'll have to get her on the show sometime. It's a pretty nice little website she's created here for the world to see. But she's got this recipe that caught our eye here for best stuffed baked potatoes, as creamy stuffed baked potatoes loaded with cheese and bacon are a show-stopping side dish perfect for any meal. And she, Donya, says, I love to turn an easy-to-make weeknight meal into something special by serving these loaded potatoes with crock-pot beef roast and a fresh green salad. Donya, if you have an extra spot there at the table, do you mind if I pull up to it? Donya says, I know it, y'all know it, everybody knows it. Potatoes cooked almost any way is comfort food at its best. Besides that warm and comfortable feeling that potatoes produce, it is that other crazy thing. You can cook them in a million different ways. And here, she's got a recipe for this incredible stuffed baked potato. And she says you need to pin this recipe, as it includes salt and pepper, sour cream, shredded cheddar cheese, russet potatoes, onions, cooked chopped bacon, butter, and a green onion. That's what you need for this awesome I mean, it sure looks awesome. I'm sure it tastes awesome. And you can have all these ingredients put into these stuffed baked potatoes. As she says, what's the best potato to use for this particular recipe? She says, my favorite potato for this recipe is russet potatoes. They bake up lightly and fluffy, and you can use, if you don't have russet, you can use Yukon Gold or even yellow potatoes. Question about this, can stuffed potatoes be made ahead of time? Danya says, yep, they sure can. Make the potatoes per the recipe, up to adding the cheese on top and baking. Wrap the potatoes in plastic wrap and store them in the fridge for up to 4 days. To serve, remove from the fridge, top with cheese, and then bake. So you can do all the prep work if you're going to, you know you're going to be under a time crunch when it's tater time, and do all the other stuff prior to baking it. And these things, she says, will be able to hold out for several days. Now, a question on Danya's site, what to serve with stuffed baked potatoes? As she says, they are perfect as the main event for dinner or as a side dish. But if you need to accompany them with something, Danya suggests here at asouthernsoul.com, weeknight dinners, these would go along with oven-baked barbecue chicken as well as air fryer salmon. For a big Sunday supper, right after training union on Sundays, for example, you can have for a Sunday supper these baked stuffed potatoes and go along with comparing them or companion piece for them, crock pot chicken thighs and roasted pork tenderloin. Am I making you hungry? And she also says, don't forget about these wonderful stuffed baked potatoes for special events like holidays. And so they go great maybe at Christmas or Thanksgiving with honey-baked ham or possibly crock-pot roasted turkey breast and these stuffed baked potatoes. The recipe and all the tips on how to make it you can find at the website, A Southern Soul, Danya Mullins, the potato-in-chief there with this website. And one reason I like this recipe, it's not that complicated. It doesn't require that many ingredients. And who doesn't like a delicious baked potato, especially done the way this thing has with the bacon and the cheese? Oh, yummy, yummy, yummy. Thank you, Danya, for this addition to our Southern food repertoire. And we look forward to going back to your website again soon. She's got an ebook version of A Southern Soul you can check out, and lots of suggestions for recipes if you've got potatoes or anything else on your mind. I'm really looking forward to checking out her spaghetti sauce recipe, because that's something in the South. We got some wide varieties of options, and I'm still looking for the best sketty out there. If y'all know where I can find it, let me know. Ooh, that just reminds me, that might be a wonderful meal the next time I sit down to load up. Thank you for A Southern Soul for this great article about the good and delicious taters of the South. And you can check that article out again on Danya's website. The best Southern or best stuffed baked potatoes. That wraps up our Y'all Show Tuesday. Join us Wednesday. We've got plenty of business talk and a lot more fun on the show that shakes the Southland, The Y'all Show, powered by y'all.com.